Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. It's tax season, and we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's one you need to hear. $16.5 billion. That's how much the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud last year. Now here's a good number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Hi, everyone. Hope you're having a great weekend. It's going to close strong because you're watching One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Hope you're dressed. Coming up on the show, we got Mike Rowe. Is this big switch in our economy going to help the blue-collar worker? He would know. Jimmy Failla on the media moments that stand out for him this week, and there's been a lot. And Bonnie Horry, she is the food babe. Talk about the big moves RFK Jr. is making at HHS. It was a really big week for him. But first, the fastest, most effective monologue in America. This week, the long game versus the short game. Conventional wisdom has always been that China is the emerging superpower, playing the long game, never the short game, taking advantage of our four-year cycle, which often redirects America's economic and foreign policies, like last time. Decisions depending on which party is in power, like the big switch from Biden to Trump. And suddenly, all of a sudden, America gets slowed down. That's supposed to hurt us. Well, the 100-year plan for China has allowed them to move from a third-world country to a first-world country. I'll grant them that. Their mission to surpass us has not happened. It's been delayed and perhaps denied. Why is that? Well, America has reelected an unorthodox businessman who has done something other presidents only talked about and politicians have not been able to pull off. Identify China's game early and counter it with speed. And it seems to be throwing off the communist country. Now, in the first term, as you know, Trump was able to rein them in to a degree and begin a trade reset with a phase one deal.
The word that I want to use is reciprocal. When they charge 25% for a car to go in, and we charge 2% for their car to come into the United States, that's not good. This is the first of many. This is number one, but this is the first of many.
But unfortunately, he wasn't able to finish the job in just 4 years. China ignored the agreement, and Joe Biden did not enforce it. They instead bullied and intimidated a cognitively compromised Biden and his weak team.
People within the United States actually have little confidence in the democracy of the United States. There are many problems within the United States regarding human rights, which is admitted by the U.S. itself as well. And the challenges facing the United States in human rights are deep-seated. They did not just emerge over the past 4 years. So we do hope that for our two countries, it's important that we manage our respective affairs well instead of deflecting the blame on somebody else in this world.
Isn't that sickening? They're lecturing us. And you know what? The Biden team just took it. But don't fret. Don't worry, because Trump is now back. And for the first time, it seems, China's slow and steady 100-year plan to dominance might have met its greatest challenge. A president who prioritizes speed and strength. A president that doesn't just want to do this in 4 years. He actually wants to do this and reset the relationship in just 4 months.
The White House, there's a new tariff in town. 10% across the board on all countries.
The president is unloading on China after it responded to U.S. tariffs by imposing a reciprocal 34%. Trump says virtually every country wants to negotiate with the U.S. in the wake of tariff announcements.
China got slapped with 50% tariffs after Beijing retaliated.
90 days of reprieve for everyone except China, which got whacked with an increase to 125%.
Wow, and that was just some of the coverage on Liberation Day. Now the question is, who has the cards to win the ultimate showdown? America currently gets, get this, 73% of the smartphones, 78% of our laptops, 87% of our video game consoles, 77% of our toys from China. Families will feel it, but China has major issues itself. This is the flip side. People there aren't working. China's youth unemployment continues to surge. No jobs, and the whole generation, the next generation, 18 to 34, uninspired. They have a huge housing glut. Their cities are empty. They're dubbed ghost cities. No people. The nation is full of half-built mansions and communities. Take a look. A true sign of a growing real estate crisis. They're living through it right now. Maybe it's because of their former one-child-per-family policy. It's continuing to haunt the nation. Their population, as big as it is, has dropped for the third year in a row. There's more proof that their massive stimulus deployed in 2008 was not the unqualified success many progressives here thought it was. Trump is on to their other big move, rerouting exports through other countries like Vietnam, Thailand, Mexico, to bypass the tariffs. And Goldman Sachs then says they expect the latest round of tariffs, the tariffs they're experiencing right now, to drag down China's GDP by 0.5% and is forecasting 4% growth, 3.5% in 2026. And tariffs are not the only problem this country is facing. Just 5 years ago, the country started and spread COVID. Yeah, they poisoned all of us. They mocked people in other nations like us for being unable to control it. But they were slammed and they were knocked flat on their backs despite their inhumane lockdowns. So maybe it's just me, but things just don't seem to be so great with this behemoth superpower. And China's best move so far to combat Donald Trump is flooding the market with cheap stuff, all while destroying everyone else's economy, knocking off American products with impunity.
What are you going to do, 25% every day until you're at 400? Just go to 400. And then it becomes impossible for them to access the American market, which is 39% of all consumption in the world and 26.1% of the world's GDP. China cannot do without America. I've had it with getting screwed on IP. I'm done. And I want someone to go in there and level the playing field.
Yeah, they knock off all our products, and they're actually beating us with our products. And a lot of times you can buy them on Amazon. One of our greatest advantages has always been our innovation-based economy and those friendships and alliances with other nations. Because of this, we've been reliable. And Donald Trump should be cognizant of how important those relationships are and very careful not to take advantage of our allies while at the same time resetting our trade deals to make it more fair. China may be in on the long game. That might be their game. But are they prepared to handle Trump's speed and his strength and his short game? In honor of this Masters weekend, I'd like to build on that theme, to look through the lens of golf. In order to be great, like those you saw play this weekend, you actually need to be both good in the long game and the short game. You need distance and power to get the ball close to the green, but you also need finesse and accuracy to get the ball in the hole. And don't be confused. This fight is a full contact contest, and both sides thrive in never giving in. It's going to be a tough one. Joining us now, a man who knows all about it, wrote a best-selling book, number one in the nation, Seven Things You Can't Say About China. Well, great to see you, Senator Tom Cotton. Your thoughts about the battle we're in right now, trade, but it's more than that.
Yeah, Brian, it is a lot more than that, but in some ways it starts with trade. For decades, the United States allowed China to take advantage of our workers and our businesses, really our whole economy, and that's what made China strong, powerful, and wealthy, that funded its military buildup. There's been a lot of news over the last week or so saying that Donald Trump has started a trade war with China. That's wrong. China has been waging a trade war against the United States for decades. Donald Trump is simply trying to fight back on behalf of Americans. That's exactly what we need to do and what I've been trying to do for years in Congress as well.
But, Senator, he's not going to back off President Xi. He lives off strength. He's got more power or as much power as Mao. You write about that in your book. And if he backs off now, He could show a weakness to his people that he is really oppressed.
Yeah, Brian, I don't think that he'll back down, at least in the short term. But as you cited, China has a lot of problems as well because of their monstrous, barbaric one-child policy, which resulted in the forced abortions of more than 300 million Chinese babies, more than 200 million forced sterilizations of Chinese women. They are in a demographic collapse. Their population is declining. They have massive debt problems, both public debt and business debt. They have, as you said, these ghost cities and a massive real estate glut. These are all serious long-term problems for China's economy. At the same time, in the short term, it could actually make them more dangerous and more aggressive in the same way that a cornered animal can lash out. So I think it's vital that we be vigilant, that we have strength and confidence in standing up for America and our friends in the Western Pacific against Chinese aggression, whether it's economic, diplomatic, political, or even military.
They have to be open to our courts. We got to be able to sue them and get our trademarks back. And we got to knock them off our stock exchange. And they're going to try to unnerve us by trying to sell our bonds. They have $760 billion worth of our debt. I want to go to another area of expertise, and that is the Russia-Ukraine war and the Russia-China relationship. I was stunned to find out, according to the Ukrainian officials and a couple of guys that they were captured, that they got a couple hundred guys fighting for Russia against Ukraine. I thought they were not supporting either side. I thought they were worried about denying their even dual-use material being sent there. What's your take on this?
You know, China has been working alongside not just Russia, but other countries like Iran as well, buying illicit Iranian oil, for instance. But from the very beginning of the Ukraine war, when Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin declared a so-called no-limits friendship between their two nations, China has, as you cited, Brian, been providing a lot of technology and components that Russia needs for its military because of Western sanctions. We now have these reports of Chinese nationals fighting alongside Russians in Ukraine. At best, China can say they simply turned a blind eye to it. Because remember, this is a country that runs a techno-totalitarian police state. They can track you down if you put the slightest, right, slightest doubt about Xi Jinping or the Chinese Communist Party online. Are we really supposed to believe that they didn't know, right, that dozens, maybe hundreds of Chinese nationals had traveled to Ukraine? I don't buy that for a second. At best, right, they turned a blind eye to it.
Lastly, Pete Hegseth announced this week as Secretary of Defense that he saved $5 billion in contracts that he just canceled. But he wants a $1 trillion defense budget. It's about $250 billion more than we had under Joe Biden. Can you get it for him?
Well, I think we can, Brian. And I think if you look at what we've been talking about with the threat from China and Russia and Iran, how can we afford not to? We're moving in that direction already. Our military needs substantially more investment to defend our nation from the threat of China, from the threat of a nuclear Iran. So I do believe we're going to move in that direction in the Trump administration. That's in addition to, Brian, up to $150 billion of new separate investments in our military for things like building new ships or building a lot more munitions, yeah, for our aircraft and our ships that the Congress is working on right now in the large budget bill. I know that's very expensive, and it's asking a lot from the American people. But my question would be, can we afford, right, not to make these investments in our military?
And if you want to understand exactly the fight and the depth of the relationship with the U.S. and China and the friction, pick up Senator Tom Cotton's book. Senator, always great to have you on. Thanks so much for closing out the weekend with us.
Thanks, Brian.
The U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate are going to do our job, and we are going to provide stability, and we are going to send this message to all of our allies and friends around the world, and to our adversaries as well, that America is back and the America First agenda will be enacted. President Trump's promises will be fulfilled.
But it wasn't easy. But we are one step closer to President Trump's big, beautiful bill. After the House passed the Senate's blueprint, it's time to get to work, many say. Here to take us inside what's next with the president's agenda, along with his reaction to somewhat of a phase one agreement on the big, beautiful bill, is James Blair. James got a lot of important jobs, one of which assistant to the president and White House deputy chief of staff. James, how hard was it to get to this point?
Look, it took some work, but I don't think it was really all that hard. It just takes time. There are differing views in our conference, whether on the House side or the Senate side, and frankly, across the hall from each other. Our job is to get everybody rowing in the same direction, focus on what we agree on, and just work through our differences together. So those things take time. I don't want to say it was that hard. Certainly the president's very engaged every step of the way, but the Senate leadership and the House leadership, and frankly the members, they all want to achieve a great reconciliation bill, which is what we call it, obviously, right, and to achieve the president's agenda. So we've gotten the easy part out of the way, and now the real work begins, as you said.
Right. I mean, there's certain promises the president made. No taxes on tips, no taxes on Social Security. Revisit the SALT threshold for being able to, the ability to write off local taxes, and that, and at the same time, cutting spending without cutting entitlements. That's not easy, but yet do you see a way to a finish line? And if so, what month do you see this happening?
I absolutely see a way to a finish line, and you're right. It's not necessarily easy. There's a lot of this to work through, and I think we'll get it done pretty quickly. I think, you know, before the summer, early summer, you know, maybe around May or June, and I don't want to put a hard timeline on it because obviously we'll take as much time as we need to get it right without taking too much time. Obviously, we've got to deal with the debt extension, which the president has talked quite a bit about, and there's a timeline on that, and we'll get that done. Look, the next several weeks are going to be everybody sort of working around the clock in the room together.
You know, the one thing I love that I think the American public are going to demand is when you guys bring cameras into the cabinet meetings. President Biden had 8 in 4 years. But this is the second time we've seen the questions, got the whole with your whole team. And one of the things that came up was Elon Musk and what he was able to do. He said he had an announcement. He cut $150 billion, expects to lose $150 billion out of the budget through identifying abuse. Here's what he said.
I'm excited to announce that we anticipate savings in FY26 from reduction of waste and fraud by $150 billion. And some of it is just absurd, like people getting unemployment insurance who haven't been born yet. I mean, I think anyone can appreciate whether, I mean, come on, that's just crazy.
I mean, people not born yet, people 120 years old. James, I'm not sure this is your lane, but is there going to be investigations to this to find out? A lot of this is coming from other countries, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that the president and Attorney General Bondi and others have been very clear that to the degree we can find illicit and organized fraud or misuse of taxpayer dollars, I think we'll absolutely pursue it. But, you know, as you said, why does this take time? Because we're trying to really root out what's been happening, this corruption and fraud. You know, it's one thing to say, well, we'll just cut the budget back or cut a program back by 10% or 20%. But what we're trying to do is actually get rid of all the waste for the first time ever. And there's a lot of reasons that waste has happened. But the fact of the matter is, you know, these programs have been in place for decades, in some cases 50, 60, 70 years. And no one has ever looked. No one's done simple things like matching up Social Security numbers, as Elon has talked about, looking at how old the folks are on the rolls, what the date of births are, could they even be alive, and then following those threads out. So that's what we're doing. It's a complex task, but it's going to have real lasting impact for the American taxpayer. And it's going to allow us to ultimately save these programs that cost taxpayers a significant amount of money.
So do you think he's going to get to $1 trillion this fiscal year or over the course of 10 years in terms of $1 trillion in savings that he spoke about?
I certainly think we'll get to $1 trillion over the course of 10 years. We would love to see it in 1 year. I'm not sure whether or not we'll get there. It'll just take time to figure that out because we're continuing to work through it. But certainly, I think $1 trillion over 10 years, there's a very good chance that that's going to happen. And you've seen that Leader Thune and Speaker Johnson have gone out and said they really want to work hard together to try to find at least $1.5 trillion in savings over a 10-year period. And, you know, that process will play out. But I think we'll get there on the 10-year for sure.
All right. James Blair, he's assistant to the president, White House deputy chief of staff. Extremely important job. James, thanks so much for your time. Now back to the action for you. All right.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. Next for Trump, these tariffs are not about Wall Street. He's not talking about that. He's talking about Main Street when it comes to tariffs. And we found the best guest to talk about Main Street, and that's Mr. Blue Collar himself, Mike Rowe. By the way, quick note, catch me on tour, History, Liberty, and Laughs, three brand new dates, June 21st, Dayton, Ohio, Victoria Theater, Dallas, Texas, August 23rd, Winspear Opera House, that was just announced, Richmond, Virginia, September 27th, Carpenter Theater, BrianKilmeade.com. It's all part of a Fox Nation special, too. We'll be streaming some of those. Don't move.
What do you do when things get...
The Trump agenda is focused on Main Street. It's Main Street's turn. It's Main Street's turn to hire workers. It's Main Street's turn to drive investment. And it's Main Street's turn to restore the American dream.
And that, of course, our Treasury Secretary. That is his goal. And it was even before he was named Treasury Secretary. He came on my radio show a lot. Meanwhile, the tariffs just keep on coming. Fair is fair. Look at some of these headlines. The Trump administration continues to reshape the global economic order. We're seeing that. Wall Street had its day, but it's time for Main Street to shine. That is the mantra. President Trump wants to bring jobs and manufacturing back to the U.S. Is it possible to restore the American manufacturing identity that built this country? Let's ask the host of The Way I Heard It. His podcast is fantastic, and so is he. He's the founder of Mike Rowe Works. Mike Rowe, great to see you.
And you're not just saying that because you've been a guest on the podcast.
I know. It's great.
And because you're going to come back sometime soon to further elucidate my audience.
When you have a guest that cancels at the last minute, you know I'm going to respond to you. So, Mike, I thought about you right away. You know, I've been harassing you all week when we started talking about the worker and manufacturing. Is it resonating with the blue-collar workers that you're talking to, the effort that's being made?
There are a lot of economists on both sides of the aisle who think this is a really bad idea. And there are a lot of economists right of center who don't agree with each other either. So the first thing I'm just struck by is, are we having a conversation with people who believe that the economy is the most important thing in the country? Mm-hmm. Or are we having a conversation with people who believe that from time to time, there are some other things that are more important? To stay sane, I think it's important to understand, for me anyway, who I'm talking to and where they're coming from with regard to the primacy of the economy. And that has been really hard to nail down, for me anyway. But so, on a personal level.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, the main thing was I struck me is that in the Rose Garden, when the president announced Liberation Day, he had blue collar workers and union people there. And that was his approach. So, and they bought in. And I had interviewed people in the morning and they said they're really encouraged by it. And the auto workers union is, too. That used to never be the case with Republicans. And then as I'm thinking about that, then I thought about what's the practicality of it. And I saw Neil Ferguson, who we both know from Hoover, and he writes this. Every country that industrialized reached a point where manufacturing as a share of employment declined as people moved into less physically demanding jobs. He goes on to say, this happened all over the world. The vision that Trump has is the equivalent of going back in time. So do you think the manufacturing is a pipe dream? Are we trying to go back to something that doesn't exist anymore?
Again, I hate to paint with too broad a brush, but since you mentioned my podcast, I'll tell you, most of the sponsors there make stuff in America, and I've been talking to them. I literally just got off the phone with the CEO at American Giant, and you got to put yourself in their place too. For 15 years, they've been betting on this country. They're not affected at all by a global supply chain, but they're impacted by the ability to hire local talent in the manufacturing space. And I think that's what you're asking, right? It's like, for me, I'm rooting for the president. I want to see a reinvigoration of American manufacturing. But I was rooting for Obama, too, in 2009 with the Highway Infrastructure Act. And remember, he was talking about creating 3 million shovel-ready jobs. And as a guy who had just started a foundation around skilled labor, my message to him was, be careful. You're not talking to a country who's really enthused by the prospect of picking up a shovel. Well, the same thing is true today. If the president is able to create 1 or 2 million new jobs in manufacturing, what do you say about the undeniable fact that as of January of this year, we had 482,000 open positions in manufacturing currently in this country. So there's so many things to talk about, Brian, but the thing that gets left out and the reason I promised and made good on it to come on here is to simply don't forget about the paucity. That means the dearth. That means the lack of enthusiasm for these jobs at this moment. We need to do something collectively to reinvigorate enthusiasm for the skilled trades. And you've heard me say it 1,000 times. When we pulled shop class out of high school, we unleashed a kraken. And it's been an uphill slog ever since to persuade the kinds of people that we were just looking at right. to give these jobs an honest look. That's what keeps me up at night.
Well, we could add that to education again, too, and that should be something Linda McMahon talks about, bringing those skills back. And we'll see. A lot of times people are calling my radio show saying, hey, I'm in manufacturing, but it's not like it used to be. A lot of robots and automation, but it's still manufacturing. So it's not like the 1920s the way it used to be. And we'll see if we could bring it back.
No, it's not.
And I've had it with Amazon complaining when 2/3 of every product they have is from China. That's not my fault. And it's not Trump's fault.
That's right.
Mike Rowe, thanks so much.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me on. I'll see you next time on this one.
And just make sure I could see the Emmy clear next time. I want it on the middle shelf, not just in the back. There you go. Thank you. Something else I don't have that Mike Rowe has. I appreciate it. All right, next, the media moments that matter. Jimmy Failla is here, so don't move. Remember, I want to hear from you. Send us an email or video. I'll air it. I'll try to air it. I'll get you something from our collection. Jerry wrote me and says this, Brian, I really enjoy watching your show. I'm a lifelong Democrat. Taking a cue from Kid Rock, it's time we sit down and talk about ideas we have in common rather than point fingers at each other. We're the greatest nation on earth. I think we can all agree on that. Let's not waste time blaming each other the way things are. Instead, find solutions that will benefit us all. I like that spirit. Keep the emails coming. Maybe we should call each other, blame it on another. It's late. Girl, I want it. Should we make another mistake? On the colors, I say I'm a color.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer live in New York. The company involved in a deadly helicopter crash on the Hudson River is shutting down. The FAA said in a statement posted on X that New York Helicopters Tours will shut down its operations immediately. The FAA will also launch a review into the tour's operations, license, and safety record. The sightseeing helicopter was carrying a family of five from Spain and the pilot when it fell apart midair on Thursday. All six people on board were killed. And a former Louisiana State University football player has died. A spokesperson for LSU confirmed 24-year-old Green Lacey was found dead Saturday night in Houston. The Harris County Sheriff's Office says Lacey died from an apparent suicide after pursuit. Lacey was facing criminal charges stemming from a deadly car accident in December that killed a 78-year-old man in Louisiana. Lacey led LSU in receiving touchdowns last year. The 24-year-old had declared for this month's NFL draft. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, and back to One Nation.
Media moments that matter.
Yep, that's all we could pay him to say. Just that one line. It's that time again. The week where I give a VCR on a Monday and a TV guide to a host of my choice. And I ask him to tell me the media moments that matter. They look through the tape. They promise to rewind. And I chose Jimmy Failla. I gave it away. Fox News Saturday Night host. You're the same guy who's on Saturday, right?
That's me.
And throughout the week, who's got that great radio show?
But I loved using the VCR. I felt like Joe Biden for the week. I was old school. I busted out the rotary phone like he had in the Oval Office. It was great.
A little bit of a throwback, but you completed your mission. At least you told me you did. What's your first selection?
Not only did I do it, okay, but I have a surprise topic. But my first one, let's stay on message, okay, is the Honestly podcast. Barry Weiss was talking about how America lost trust in the media. Look at this sot.
How'd that happen?
How about it?
You think about trust, I feel like the trust really started to shatter over the last decade. The first was the creation of Twitter. I would get on a feed and I would see reporters who I had trusted, who I had admired, making it crystal clear what their views were, what side they were on.
The whole edifice, really, of the New York Times and other places began to shift what they openly talked about their goal being. In other words, it was no longer about holding up a mirror to the world as it actually is. It was about open resistance to Donald Trump.
The political media had one job, which was to understand America and explain it to our audience. And the media utterly failed. People started giving their time and attention to other outlets, to newer outlets that were able to explain to them in a way that they trusted.
So, Jimmy, I know why you selected that. This is the mainstream media. Three good guys, by the way. They're very talented. But they were the middle. They were in control. And they're saying, how do we lose control? And part of it was because a lot of stuff they were saying was not true. And we were able to research it.
Well, that's the biggest problem. Everybody writing these, like, Biden cover-ups right now, like, oh, the expose.
It's still happening.
And I know. But what they didn't realize is that it didn't work in real time. Like, they thought they were covering up his cognitive decline, but the rest of us, it was like, have you ever played hide-and-seek with a two-year-old when they pretend they're hiding by doing this, but they're standing in the middle of the kitchen?
Or they cover their eyes.
Yeah, that was the media. They're like, we're covering up the Biden thing. We're like, no, no, it's not working. He just shook hands with an invisible person.
Right. That is totally true. Also, they have to acknowledge the Russia investigation in the middle of that.
At
but you weren't done at one.
No, number two, are you ready for this? So CBS, I love this so much. They twice, they did a story about the threat of Chinese honeypots.
Right.
You know,
to lure you in.
Scantily clad women that lure you in to get dirt out of you on the American government. But they managed to do this without mentioning Eric Swalwell and Fang Fang. Imagine doing a segment about towns that gamble and leaving out Las Vegas.
Unless you show me a tape, I do not.
Here it is.
Let's just show me a tape, I don't believe.
Oh, you're going to love it. Here it is.
It sounds like something out of a spy movie, and often is, but it is also, I promise, and I just learned this myself, a very real strategy. The spies, again, known as honeypots, use the technique often enough that it is a very big national security threat.
It is an incredibly effective strategy. Foreign intelligence services want to get access to information, and they prey upon individuals' vulnerabilities. Loneliness, romantic feelings, sexual desires, those are a vulnerability.
They're not going to mention the Democrat that was lured in.
And they clearly didn't need to see our first topic about why nobody trusts the media anymore. Like, CBS could make a coloring book called Where's Fang Fang? You know they had Where's Waldo? Where's Fang Fang in that segment?
So the next one that you chose, you really needed your VCR because I know you weren't watching in real time. You do not watch CNN primetime.
Definitely not on a school night. Yes. My parents don't want me up that late, okay? But this is the famous misgendering that rocked the political cable news world. Bernie Sanders was doing a town hall.
Yes.
You know what happens next. Let's go.
I want to introduce Grace Thomas. She's a local civil rights attorney. She's a Democrat. Grace?
They, them pronouns, actually. Thank you.
Oh.
What did he say? My pronouns?
What is so amazing about that is if you stick with it a little longer, she actually reads a poll and asks Bernie why Democrats are losing the male vote. Bernie missed a golden opportunity. He should have been like, why are you assuming their gender? You know, he should have pushed back on her.
Right.
But here we go. We have a surprise topic. You are not ready for this.
I am not.
Okay. Greg Gutfeld clearly harbors a bias against one of the Fox and Friends hosts, perhaps even a One Nation host. I'm not going to name names, but it seems to rhyme with Brian Kilmeade. Take a look at this.
He's the reason millions of Americans sleep in. Host of Fox and Friends and One Nation, Brian Kilmeade.
Which is why they're losing viewers faster than an episode of Gutfeld when it starts with, I'm your guest host, Brian Kilmeade. I almost feel bad. I almost feel bad for insulting you earlier.
Oh, the key word is almost, right?
Yes, that feeling will fade. But we must move on. Brian, you are an idiot. I wasn't mean to him.
I mean, a lot of tough love.
Why do we go on that show?
Greg harbors a resentment for anyone over 5'1". Okay? He gives me a hard time about my clothes all the time. I'm like, sorry, we can't all shop the Peter Dinklage collection. I'm Team Kilmeade all the way.
All right, thank you very much. Because you know Greg wouldn't watch this show, and you could still be friends with him.
Nah, even if he would.
All right, so, hey, listen, thank you very much.
You're the best.
I'm going to need you to return the VCR.
Right? All right, fine.
I'll find out the next week. It might be Carly Shimkus. All right, next, RFK is on a mission to make America healthy again, and my next guest is right there with them. The food babe is next.
But in America, our kids get 4 artificial dyes first thing in the morning. Why do we allow these products to be sold in our schools? How can we raise the brightest children in this world, our future leaders, while we're polluting their little brains first thing in the morning? Are we just... I told you I don't.
I got to share this story. It's mascot madness. It all involved my hometown, Massapequa, New York. They're asking for help from President Trump and the Secretary of Education, McMahon, to block a million-dollar rebrand triggered by woke politics. So you have a New York law. Hold on to something tight. It's demanding schools remove all logos related to American Indians, so-called indigenous people, by the end of this school year or risk losing state funds. They claim using indigenous names like mascots and logos cause harm to the American Indian. Really? Not to the Indian groups that I heard from. Nobody's speaking up about this. This, to me, is political correctness gone wild. So I interviewed on the radio Frank Blackcloud. He's vice president of the Native American Guardians Association. I want to know, is he insulted by the name chiefs?
The people that are trying to take it away is the insulting part of this whole situation. Naga's mission is to educate, not eradicate. And none of them want to listen to us. The schools that represent us, they do it in an honorable way. These names are not derogatory. They're not hostile. There's so many more important things that this money can be spent on besides trying to take away something that is honorable. This world is upside down and backwards right now.
So are you going to change the Kansas City Chiefs name, or are you just going to beat up on a high school Chiefs? What about the Braves? Are the Atlanta Falcons, is Atlanta Braves changing their name? Or are you just going to beat up on a high school that can't afford to fight back? What about the Golden State Warriors? That's a problem. Well, a neighboring town called Wantagh is called the Warriors. That's what this governor is focused on. It is sickening. It is time, with our education cratering for these Indian names, to stay where they are and focus on what really matters, and that's the students, and stop messing with tradition. Chiefs should stay. Mr. President, we need you to act and step in again in New York.
What we're doing to our children is criminal. Why are we paying for sugar drinks that are poisoning our kids and giving them diabetes? The taxpayer should not be paying that in a nutrition program.
Yup, that's Health and Human Services Secretary RFK Jr. on the road pushing the Make America Healthy Again movement and the agenda. A pair of noteworthy MAHA movement victories, easy for me to say, happened in Utah. A first-in-the-nation ban on fluoride in tap water. Arizona, two bills, one banning SNAP program recipients from using the funds to buy soda. It's not good for you. And another banning chemical food additives from school lunches. My next guest is no stranger to fighting the good fight against America's nutritional crisis. You could actually say she was the first. She's known as the Food Babe. She's back with us, Vonnie Hari, a New York Times bestselling author and activist to get America healthy again. Vonnie, your reaction to RFK hitting his stride early?
I mean, it's absolutely incredible. 24 different states are looking to submit a waiver right now to remove soda from SNAP. We should not be giving high fructose corn syrup water as nutritional dollars in this country. That's $10 billion check to Coca-Cola and Pepsi that we'll be saving. $240 billion over the next 10 years or so is what they're estimating.
Well, that's good in that movement. The pushback is, can't people have choice just because they don't have a lot of money? If they want soda, shouldn't they have soda? What's your reaction?
They absolutely can buy soda if they want, just not with nutritional government dollars. Right now, we have governors across the states looking at signing these waivers. But there's a lot of lobbying going on, too, by the American Beverage Association and other lobbying groups that support these big soda companies. And you see governors like the Kansas State governor who submitted a waiver and then ended up vetoing it based on this pressure. So we're up against a monumental hill here, but we've had the incredible leadership by Secretary Rollins and Secretary Kennedy on this issue. They just wrote an amazing op-ed in the USA Today this week and in other newspapers across the nation. I never have seen, actually, the HHA secretary in previous administrations ever write an op-ed talking about the need for eating more real food, looking at food as medicine, and making sure that we dedicate our nutritional dollars to healthy food.
Something you're very familiar with, taking on big companies. Kellogg's is under investigation for marketing food as healthy despite their artificial food dyes. Where's this going?
Well, Texas AG Ken Paxton, who just announced his Senate run, actually, is investigating Kellogg's as the state of Texas, saying that it is absolutely not healthy to serve us, serve Americans artificial food dyes that are linked to hyperactivity in children and other additives that are endocrine-disrupting chemicals, and call your product healthy. He's also upset that Kellogg's announced in 2015 that they would remove these chemicals, and they didn't. And so he's holding this company accountable.
Yeah, it's interesting because Fruit Loops especially and Apple Jacks, take a look what's in it. You're going to be horrified. Now, lastly, the Trump administration has decided they will not, and led by RFK and the HHS secretary, won't let Medicare cover anti-obesity drugs like Ozempic and Mounjaro. Your reaction to that? Because, number one, it's cost prohibitive. It costs billions of dollars. And the people that can't afford it won't be able to get it. How do you feel about that?
Well, here's what it really means, is that we're going to be looking at root causes of what really has created the obesity epidemic. It's not an Ozempic deficiency. Actually, Ozempic has a ton of side effects that are very detrimental. It hasn't been studied long term. This isn't a solution for our obesity epidemic. Actually, Big Food has figured out that these GLP-1 drugs actually threaten their profits because it turns off the craving factor in someone's body. And so they've figured out what flavors GLP-1 users are craving, and they're actually engineering their food with those specific flavors so that they can keep their food hooked on people. And so imagine if you're taking this drug thinking you're going to lose weight and you're going to keep that weight off for the existence of your lifetime, but the food industry re-engineers food just to bypass that drug in your body. That's where we're headed with this, and this is why pharmaceutical drugs never really address the root cause of why we are so sick. We need to look at food as medicine. We need to look at more prevention related therapies using our Medicaid and Medicare dollars.
Rather than shots in the thighs. Foodbabe.com is where you find out more. Look forward to exciting things happening on the nutritional front. Thanks so much. Always great to see you, Vani.
Great to see you, Brian.
All right. Up next, your sneak peek at the week ahead.
What do you do when things get...
Time now for your sneak peek of the week. Let's begin in the House and the Senate. Well, they're not in session this week. Not much to report, but a lot to work on behind the scenes. How about this? President Trump will welcome El Salvador's President Nayib Bukele to the White House. They'll be going to be talking about that supermax prison. I am sure they've been very loyal to this president. Also, Italy's Prime Minister Meloni meets with the president, talking tariffs. Maybe they'll get a deal done in person. Football, yes, in college football, Ohio State are the champions. They will visit the White House tomorrow, and that'll be fun. That is it for us tonight. Tune into my radio show 9 to noon. America loves it, BrianKilmeadShow.com. Catch Fox and Friends every single day, 6 to 9. America loves that, too. And I lead with my phrase that could turn around your life if you would just pay attention to it, and that is, stay within yourself, America.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.